Welcome to Community Connections, and being the first Monday in the month, we have for the last time this year, Peter, our private investigator. So let's say hello. How are you, Peter?
Yeah, good, thank you, on this lovely Wednesday, Alan.
It's a beautiful day out there, isn't it?
It is indeed, yes, yeah, starting to warm up. It's nice.
Bit of warm weather to come up in the next few days, but also a bit of rain, so that'll look after gardens as well. Peter, we had some questions last time, as we've got some to send your way with today, and it was talking about the surveillance that you do. Now, we don't expect you to tell us anything about the different ways you do it, because that's, you're not going to tell that. But the sort of things that we were asked was the long surveillance you've done, where they're normally done, and also where there is in exotic places like the zoo or museum or something, whether you just sit in a coffee shop. If you've ever been caught out, someone's come up and tapped you on the shoulder and said, hey, you're looking for me. Have you ever been in the situation, let's be honest, we all have to take a toilet break and come back and found the person that you were looking as disappeared, and a bit of a profile on if somebody came to you today and asked you for some surveillance, what you would actually do. So plenty there, and I'll leave it over to you, Peter.
Okay, no problem. Well, I did do some homework, and I jotted down a few of the sort of the FAQ type things that I get asked along the journey. So yep. I'll start off with sort of letting people know that there's three types of surveillance. There's direct surveillance, pre-constructive surveillance, and reconstructive surveillance. So direct surveillance is probably what I would do mostly, and that's covert in nature. Yep. So it's the hope of gathering information without the knowledge of the target. So that's primarily what I'm doing.
Yep.
Pre-constructive is more public, what I would call overt surveillance, and that's usually intended as a deterrent, or basically to let the person know that they're being watched. That can be a tactic that can be used, and that, as I say, that's called overt surveillance, which is supposed to be a deterrent. And the third is the reconstructive, which is basically reviewing the information and evidence gathered from the other two techniques and looking at what facts, or probably more often what conjecture, can be established from what you've what your surveillance has revealed, either be it covert or overt. And then I thought I'd mention the breakup of surveillance from my perspective in respect to desktop, on foot, or by vehicle. So generally with surveillance, it is a very good idea to undertake some preliminary inquiries on the desktop before you even get out in the car, before entering the field. And simple checks at times can actually ascertain whether the target may or may not still be at their last known address, or for that matter, their last known employer. So that saves someone spending a packet on money basically watching the wrong place. So surprisingly, though, that doesn't always get done. And, of course, the little addition to that was a little aside there. Is a few years ago, obviously, social media, in particular Facebook, was a fantastic tool for finding out what people were doing.
They told you too much, did they?
They told us too much, exactly. But obviously now people are a lot more circumspect as to what they make available to the public. So it's a good thing and a bad thing from a private investigator's perspective, I guess. So to give you the breakup then, probably 10% of surveillance is probably the preliminary desktop inquiries. For me, over my journey, surveillance on foot is actually quite rare, and usually then only for sort of short distances or short periods of time. So that what that means is by far and probably at least 90% of all surveillance is undertaken in a vehicle, so it's vehicle-based surveillance.
All right. Peter, can I just ask, while you're just talking about that, when you say it's in the vehicle, do you ever follow people in your car, or is it mainly just you're sitting still?
No, absolutely. The objective normally is to follow people from a location to get them going to another location. To tie things in together. So it could be, if you think of the sort of the husband and wife type one, then obviously you're looking to find out where they go and who they meet up with and where they meet up, you know, whether it's a restaurant or a shopping centre or something like that. So, no, the you can sit there for any number of hours and then it can all happen pretty quickly when they're on the move. So, and that was the one of the questions you asked about the longest. So generally, as just discussed, you often comprise of sitting there for sort of hours on end, concentrating on a fixed point and waiting for something to happen one way or the other. Usually a vehicle to depart the address is the most likely thing that you're looking for. And, you know, I have over the years sat for up to 12 hours waiting for something to happen along those lines.
That's a long haul, isn't it?
Yes, at my age, I'm starting to struggle with 12 hours in the car.
Yep.
So I think I'd be very much suffering cramps after about 4 or 6 these days. But anyway, and in that period, the other aspect can be you could actually be monitoring perhaps a business or less often a private residence, and you're basically recording the comings and goings. So who comes, who goes. You might jot down vehicle registrations. You might grab a photo of two of the people. They may or may not be carrying things in and out of the premises and things along those lines. So that can be establishing whether it's perhaps a place that might be handling stolen goods or potentially handling stolen goods, I should say. Yep. Or it could even be as simple as a competitor wanting to find out how busy their other competitor is, their main competitors.
So you get asked to do that from time to time, do you?
Yep, have done that from time to time. Or could also, another one that comes up from time to time is also pilferage from the workplace. So basically sitting watching the employee's car park and seeing how often people carry stuff out and throw them in their car and take it home at the end of the shift. Yeah.
Yep. Peter, pardon me, when you say that from time to time you have to follow cars, do you ever get to the stage, and I know I'm going off TV again, where you actually have to, perhaps if you're there for a couple of days, like I don't know whether your wife's got a car, do you have to swap cars so that like you don't become too obvious?
Yeah, look, in times you have to change cars if necessary. That can be a bit of a challenge in itself, but if it's necessary to do so, you do so. So, and you're just prompting me to my next next thing I jotted down, which is saying following someone vehicle on vehicle is by no means as easy as it looks.
Oh, bet it's not.
Most certainly not like in the TVs, on the TV or in the movies. And as we've discussed before, even after 30 years of experience, I can and do make mistakes.
Peter, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Dashing through the bush in a rusty Holden ute, kicking up the dust, Esky in the boot, Kelpie by my side, singing Christmas songs. It's summertime and I am in my singlet shorts and thongs. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Christmas in Australia on a scorching summer's day. Hey! Jingle bells, jingle bells, Christmas time is new. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a rusty Holden ute. Getting hot, dodge the kangaroos, Swaggy climbs aboard, he is welcome too, all the family is there, sitting by the pool, Christmas Day, the Aussie way, by the barbecue. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way, Christmas in Australia on a scorching summer's day. Hey! Jingle bells, jingle bells, Christmas time is new. Come the afternoon, Grandpa has a doze,
The kids and Uncle Bruce are swimming in their clothes. The time comes round to go. We take a family snap, then pack the car and all shoot through before the washing up. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Christmas in Australia on a scorching summer's day. Jingle bells, jingle bells, Christmas time is near.
And, of course, that time we just a little bit of fun with Bucko and – is it Bucko and Bucko and Champ, at least, with the Aussie Jingle Bells. We're playing a little bit of funny stuff for Christmas, and I know that not everybody – Christmas is a great time. They might have lost somebody during the year that won't be here or various reasons or estranged from their families. But we'll just have a little bit of fun and play a bit of music. And also we've got from Pink Floyd coming up later, because I know Peter likes that. Peter, you were talking about surveillance, and one of the questions we got asked, what happens if you go to the toilet, if you ever had to go to the toilet or something, when you're talking 12 hours, come back and found the person's done the bunk and had to start all over again?
Yep, so that has definitely occurred. I couldn't say that it hasn't occurred, so... Yeah. Either an emergency toilet run or perhaps an emergency food run. And Murphy's Law, of course, is that you'd come back and you've missed what you didn't want to miss. Look, at the end of the day, I've got to be honest and say this: when you have a spectacular outcome, it's usually a large chunk of luck is involved in that along the way. It's never it never runs seamlessly or smoothly, but you can have your good days and bad days like everybody else, and you can have your lucky days where everything just sort of falls into place for you and you get a fantastic result for your client.
And I must say, to be honest too, if you talk to a policeman off the record that you happen to know, they will say that quite a bit of it's just luck. Like, no matter how hard they do the detective work, and they do a lot of great work, but sometimes things fall into place and other times things don't, do they?
Yeah, and look, it can be something as simple when you're trying to tie something in together and you're on your Google machine or your search engines, or you're on social media type places or marketplace type places. And because, as we all know, if you put a certain search criteria in, for the next 3 or 4 days, you get pestered matches or potential matches or something of curiosity along those lines. And every so often, one of those little prompts can actually turn out to be quite useful. So never discredit, from my perspective, never discredit the value of just typing something random in and seeing what comes up over the next couple of days. But in general terms, Alan, I found that people are generally creatures of habit, and establishing the habit or that knowledge of the habit and their patterns can be quite useful in respect to ongoing surveillance, at least anyway. People tend to go, they probably leave their estate fairly much the same way, probably return to their home and their estate pretty much the same way. They probably tend to go to the same service station, for argument's sake, or the same takeaway food place or a coffee place or something along those lines, and that can be quite helpful if you have a bit of a mishap early on. You've got a bit of an idea where you might be able to look. And again, one of the things with surveillance in general terms, as a rule of thumb, right-hand turns are certainly a lot more fraught with danger than left-hand turns. So when you think about it with your own driving, if someone's turning right, you've almost got to be right behind them, the next car. Otherwise, things
that's
can happen.
True. Hadn't thought of that.
Yep. Whereas left-hand turns, obviously, you do perhaps sometimes have the opportunity to hang back a little bit. And of course, these days with red light and speed cameras, you've got to be 100% aware of what's going on around you, because you don't want to follow them through a speed camera.
Peter, you wouldn't have an exemption on that. Like, if you got caught.
Absolutely not. No. The only thing that may happen is, If you've got a good client and you did happen to get pinged, they might pay for it. They might reimburse you. But that, or I think I've had one occasion. Actually, to be fair, I've been quite lucky, touch wood, and I've had one occasion where the client was pretty much yelling and screaming, saying, "Whatever you do, don't lose them." So I went through a red light camera. I actually stopped at the intersection and left early and got pinged for being late when I, in fact, was early. I jumped the gun, and they paid half of it anyway. So that was sort of a bit of a compromise. So,
and you couldn't appeal it, could you, like on the basis of what you're doing?
Well, you've got no excuse, no.
Yep.
No, you've got no reason for doing that, unfortunately. Exotic places you're asking about,
yep.
And... look, probably not really. I think you mentioned the zoo. Yes, I have been to the zoo. But generally, no, not really exotic places. Sometimes you go to perhaps a public facility and you might be doing a head count or something for the owner or the authority to see whether that ties in with, takings that are declared and things along those lines. But not particularly exotic places. My next prompt I typed out, Alan, was people often ask, and I think you've already asked this, what are the primary tools for surveillance?
Yes, yep.
And these days it pretty much comes down to a good late model phone with a decent camera. That almost covers everything. But my second most important tool that I love is a little small digital recorder that I actually take notes on.
Yep.
To save me having to write things down and also look away from what I'm doing whilst I'm writing things down. And that's my little toy that goes everywhere with me, and I pretty much record everything, as in make file notes, if you like.
Yep.
And that only holds 99 recordings, so I've got to keep clearing that off every day or so, and that helps me remember what I saw, and perhaps, you know, registrations and addresses and locations and things like that, and things that have happened. And it's funny, when I type them up usually a day or two later, I go, oh, I completely forgot about that. If I hadn't made a file note per se, I would never have remembered that something happened or a certain car turned up or a certain person came or went. So, and otherwise pretty much a good supply of fresh water. And I have to add, of course, the surveillance diet is not a particularly healthy diet, unfortunately.
Peter, it's got to take another quick break. We'll be back with more.
You gonna call Ghostbusters? favor, no dose. I ain't afraid of no ghosts. You just want some more. I think you better call
Ghostbusters.
Ow! Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
I think you better call
Ghostbusters.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
I can't hear you. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
Louder.
We've just gone up another degree here. We're at 24 degrees. We're chasing a top of 25, so I'm pretty certain we'll get it. Down to 13 tonight, 28 tomorrow, and then Friday a top of 31 with showers developing. Bit of rain coming up, but quite a lot of warm weather. We're talking to Peter, our private investigator. Peter, you've got a couple of more things you wanted to bring up as well?
Yeah, I thought I'd run through a few more of the FAQs that I get. One of them is, Alan, do I carry any weapons? And yep. The easy answer is a definite no. Obviously, as people would be aware, there are guards and armed guards and things like that, and there probably are people out there that hold multiple categories in respect to licences, but I've only got the licensed inquiry agent license, so no weapons and nothing along those lines. And you did touch on do you ever get detected by the target? Yep. And obviously the answer is yes. It's what we call in the industry as being burnt.
Yep. And what do you do then, Peter?
Yep, well, it can and does happen, and in the event that it becomes obvious that the target is aware that you're around, of your presence, pretty much the only course of action is to get the hell out of there and not confirm it or not try to continue to surveil them when they're aware that you're around, because clearly that's a pointless exercise and would only ever lead to confrontation, which is something you'd want to try and avoid.
Peter, in a case like that, would you go back to your client and say, well, from my point of view, this case is over?
Yeah, look, that can happen, and perhaps sometimes you might wait a week or so, or you might go back in a different car, as you touched on before, and probably sit in a different location to see if you can continue the assignment. And sometimes... And the client may not always tell you this. Someone else has already had a go at it and been caught out, and they don't tell you. Obviously, the person's surveillance aware, which just makes your job all the more harder. And often, there's been occasions I've spoken to the client and said, "You clearly, this person's been surveilled before because they're right on to anyone sitting, you know, within a kilometre of them or whatever. They seem to be aware of them." So. Yeah, and so that comes to one of the other questions is, can you sit in a certain location on on an ongoing basis, ongoing? And basically, in theory, the answer is yes. And something that your listeners may or may not be aware, but the street itself, the actual street, is actually a public place. People obviously get very territorial about, being out a car parked outside their house and things along those lines. But the bottom line is it is actually a public place, and within reason, providing you're not, harassing or things along those lines, then you've actually do have a right to be there. As annoying as that may be for the person whose house you're sitting outside. Mm. And of course, coming to that is that, wherever you sit out in the suburbs in particular, it's quite obvious that people are going to become aware that you're around. But hopefully the art of it is that you're far enough away from your actual target that they don't get to hear about it. And there's, of course, no guarantees that that may or may not happen.
Peter, if you're in, on surveillance on a commercial property and it's in a shopping block, are you able to apply to council? Because I know the workers can, if you're doing renovations or something, to get a permit so that the two-hour parking limit doesn't apply. Is that something a private investigator is allowed to have?
You can try. I think my experience is the answer would be no. You can also try and reason with the parking officers and tell them that what you're doing and show them your license and that. But again, it's entirely up to their discretion whether they elect to book you or not. There was a theory going around, which I've never actually tested one way or the other, that if you're actually sitting in your car, you shouldn't get a ticket. But I don't think that...
you don't want to risk it.
I don't think that's going to hold up either. But look, it really just comes down to personalities. And if you get a reasonable person and you tell them why you're there, and obviously you don't tell them who you're watching, but you explain that you're there, you give them a business card, you show them your license, and then it's really up to them. And to be quite frank with you, Alan, they'll probably issue the ticket anyway. So, and hopefully your client's prepared to wear that cost as well. Or you have to do it yourself. Which comes to the question about asking whether you need to advise police of your presence. So in theory, the answer is yes, but in practicality, that you're probably not going to do that for every position and every day that you're out in the field. But if it becomes apparent that the police are about to receive a phone call from one, if not multiple people, about you being in the area, then obviously a preemptive strike to actually contact the local police station, tell them who you are, pass on your vehicle registration and things like that and your location, and leave them with a contact number, of course, and that usually puts the fire out and saves the divisional van having to come out and tap on your window and find out what you're doing. So as a courtesy, if I certainly do that, if I'm pretty much know that the police are about to be called, I'll do a preemptive strike and ring them and tell them in advance so that they don't have to, waste their valuable resources. And of course, the follow-on from that, Alan, is can police actually, if they do get involved, can they ask you who you're watching and why you're there? Generally, they won't, because if they're satisfied that you've got a license and you assure them you're there for a legitimate reason, then more often than not, they're usually happy with that. The exception to that might be is if you've inadvertently stumbled into a police operation, which has happened to me.
Has that happened to you?
Yeah, it's happened a couple of times, actually. And, the other one might be if you're near a sensitive place, like perhaps somewhere in Caulfield at the moment, you probably wouldn't want to be spending too much time sitting in your car because chances are you'll draw the attention of people.
And what about a school? I guess they could get twitchy too, couldn't they?
Absolutely, yeah, and I'm very, very aware of, sitting at or near schools, and you have to be, just got to be very wary of that, and to be quite honest, you probably try and sit as far away from a school as you possibly can to avoid all that, all that stigma, and rightfully so, all that attention that you probably would draw to yourself, but sometimes it's unavoidable, and you've just got to, either let someone know quiet on the quiet, unless it's obviously the school that you're watching, then you've got a problem. But, you've got to take all those things into consideration as well. So,
Peter, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more. And then I'll give you the question for next time. That we've got three or four questions for you to come back with us in February. So I'll just take this quick break and we'll be back. And you'll want to listen to this music too, Peter.
Book with my poems in. Got a bag, got a toothbrush and a comb in. When I'm a good dog, they sometimes throw me a bone in. I got elastic bands keeping my shoes on. Got those swollen hand blues. I got 13 channels of shit on the TV to choose from.
got electric light. I got second sight. Got amazing powers of observation. That is how I know. When I try to get through on the telephone to you, there'll be nobody home.
Was Pink Floyd and Nobody Home. Do you hear that, Peter?
No, I couldn't quite make that out, unfortunately, but thank you for playing it. I'm sure your listeners enjoyed it.
I'm sure you did. What if too? Peter, some of this you've probably already answered today, but I'll get this is for you to take away and have a look at. Did you say you've been in the industry for over 30 years?
Yes, I have, yes.
Right. So the questions were from various people. Well, one was how long you've been there, so you needn't bother to research that. What's different over those 30 years compared to how you'd operate 30 years ago to compared to how you would operate now? Now,
sure.
Also, one of them was going to be what's the biggest advance of technology, but I think you've probably... Well, 30 years ago, you probably didn't use a phone for photography at all, but certainly I would suggest that you've said now that with the phones now that that's probably one of the biggest. They also wanted to know, so that's talking about you yourself, what's changed over 30 years, how your operations have changed without telling us too much. Now, the other thing is too, and I know you said you don't do as much divorce work as you used to, but they'd like you to have a look at back over your files, and I think you said you mainly work for ladies because you think they tell the truth more often than us guys. How many times the ladies are right? What sort of percentage? You know, they come to you and they say, I think my husband's cheating on me. And I guess you could also enlarge that, not only in divorce cases, but you're talking about stuff being pilfered from business premises. How often they're right, you know, whether it's 50-50 or whether it's 80-90% they're right, and so that. The other thing is, too, that we've had another question from somebody else on a completely different thing. If you'd have a look at asset protection or shoplifting, as we call it, whether there's an increase over the Christmas period, coming up to Christmas, that people want to get better presents than they can afford, so they swipe them, and whether the shoplifting moves from the suburbs to places like Lawn and Torquay and Rosebud and all those sorts of places. So there's a fair bit there, but you've got a month to do it. Or you've got nearly 2 months to do it, mate.
Yep, okay. I've got most of those answers already, but I'll flesh them out a little bit. So
yep.
Anyway, I've got one more FAQ if you want me to.
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it, mate.
And that's basically about whether police provide, you know, a private investigator with any information. And the short answer is pretty much none whatsoever. Because everyone is so conscious of privacy and things these days.
Yeah.
And, of course, the question that you're most often asked by a client who might ring up is, can I establish the owner of a vehicle? And the answer has been for many years a resounding no.
Peter, so, when you said, yep. I just want to take one step back. When you said that, you know, if you went to the police for information, and they'll pretty well say no to you, do they ever come to you and expect you to be able to give them information?
Yeah, absolutely. So there has been recent occasions because, as we understand, they're very under-resourced at the moment, and
yep.
They've actually asked for assistance in the field to establish things, particularly one of my corporate clients would agree to do.
Yep.
And it's the funny part, one of the recent ones we did was it took a week to establish a different address for the person we were interested in, and the police already knew that address, but they weren't able to tell us. We had to establish that by our own means. So that's the frustration that can happen with the privacy side of things.
So the police are quite happy to not share anything with you, but on the other hand, they'll expect... can they demand it? I suppose they probably can they?
What's that? Oh, information?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there'd be no reason not to provide police with information because at the end of the day, you're more often than not trying to get someone, you know, taken out of circulation, particularly in respect to, you know, profit protection.
Yep.
That's the objective, is to send them on a little holiday so that they quieten down for a period of time, only to usually resume hostilities as soon as they get out.
Peter, you say you were spending a bit of time in the courts trying to get different areas to see what's going on. How much of your time would you spend in courts?
A little less. COVID sort of knocked that on the head for quite a while. But I'd probably say once a fortnight I'd go to the vicinity of the court. Sometimes I'm just there to try and establish the person's identity and perhaps what vehicle they're driving, and then hopefully, you know, might have an opportunity to see where they go after court. Other times I might sit in the court and listen to their cases and a lot of other cases being called, and sometimes I'm sitting there for another reason and a case gets called and there's some information that comes up that might be interested to any one of my clients, so I obviously pass that on whilst I'm there. As a PR exercise as much as anything else.
Yep.
So, and of course, again, people, that's a public place, so there's no, unless the magistrate asks for the court to be cleared, then yep. you could sit there, if you can stay awake, you could sit there all day listening to the...
something is pretty average, doesn't it?
Yes, I find it, you know, even though there can be some quite interesting cases called that aren't relevant to the reason I'm there necessarily, but yep. Yeah, it can be... a very slow-moving process, unfortunately, and of course they're under enormous pressure with workloads and things like that. The magistrates, the courts in general, the police, prosecutors, and you know they're under very much under the pump at the moment.
Peter, look, unfortunately, our time's fast coming to an end. I've got to get out of here in a couple of minutes to let Greg Carrick come in for the Community Connections. But first of all, I want to thank you for being with us for the whole year. Well, we really do appreciate you giving up the time. It's absolute facts?
Correct, yes, right. Absolute facts.
Absolute yep. facts. And we are grateful for the time that you give it to us, and it's great that you're going to come back next year. So just very quickly, Peter, what's Christmas Day for in Peter's household? Do you have the family big lunch, or what do you have?
No, actually, I can recall you asking me this last year,
yep.
and it's a very peaceful day just with the children and their partners, although the difference will be there's a grandchild around this year as well. So
that'll change the dynamics.
And another grandchild on the way as well. So
terrific.
Yeah, but it's a nice, peaceful, pleasant day, not at our place, so we don't have to do anything. And that's rather than having the big family do, that actually happens the week before, so...
Terrific. So you don't have to get out and cook the barbecue and all that sort of jazz?
No, I'm a passenger on Christmas Day and quite liking it being that way. It's actually very enjoyable after many years of, you know, not so much for me, but the stress and the anxiety and the putting up with people that you may not necessarily want to have in your company.
No worry. Peter, look, unfortunately I've got to go. Thank you again. We look forward to having you back on the first Wednesday of the month between 1 and 2. I got the day right. And look, I wish you and your family all the very best for Christmas, and just stay safe on the roads. Do you working over Christmas or are you knocking off?
No, I'm open, so depending on how busy I might get, I'll be watching a bit of cricket on the TV, hopefully, and we'll just go with the flow. If work comes in, obviously I'm available.
So you won't be going away at all?
No, not specifically at the moment, and I just want to take the opportunity to thank you and wish you and your listeners a happy festive season as well.
Thanks very much, Peter, and we hope I'll certainly be here for another couple of weeks, but we look forward to being back with you in the new year. Thank you very much, Peter.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Merry Christmas. Bye.